please the court, Your Honor, my name is Bruce Fickell. I'm the petitioner in this dissolution. I know, and I'll take a brief moment to explain that it wasn't my idea to appear here pro se, but Mr. Scalise, the trial attorney for the case, doesn't do appellate work. Ms. Gill, who thought she entered in her appearance, had to withdraw, never entering her appearance. And Ms. West somehow took a job with the University of Denver Law School, thinking that was a better job than appealing this case. So I stand before you, ready to proceed. First, I want to talk about the trial court's division of the party's assets and the scrutinization that this court should give it. Typically, the trial court's division of assets in a dissolution proceeding is binding on review. However, where the trial court adopts carte blanche, the finding proffered by one of the parties, those findings are to be carefully scrutinized, and that is the marriage of Powell that I've cited in my case. Two illustrations of the degree to which the trial court failed to fully incorporate.
Mr. Fickell, could I interrupt you a minute? I'm very confused about the nature of this case. You're not appealing the permanent orders, is that right? It's my understanding that there was a post-trial motion filed. The court did not rule on that. What is the status of this case? This is a 60B?
There were issues raised, and the final ruling was the 60B, which started the time to file the appeal.
You're arguing what sounds like permanent orders, and that's what I'm trying to sort out. The motions division from this court said we don't want to hear an appeal from the permanent orders.
And many of those issues that were raised in the notice of appeal were also addressed. The division of marital assets, the gifting issues, were also addressed by the court in that 60B ruling. Did that answer the court's question?
Well, it doesn't clear up any confusion at all. I don't see what jurisdiction, how does a court have authority? What was the nature, let's say, of the 60B? Let's start there.
The items that were raised?
Yes.
Essentially, there was the question of whether or not there had been, number one, gifting of the Fickell Family Limited Partnership interests. Number two, whether or not the gifts, once made, were taken into account as separate property, and whether or not the appreciation on those gifts was accounted for by the trial court, which it was not.
You raised that in a 60B motion?
Yes.
Or your wife, former wife, did?
No, I did.
You did. Okay. Rule 60B, as I understand Rule 60B, is to seek relief from the judgment. And there are very narrow grounds within the rule for doing so. It's not an appeal from the underlying judgment, nor does it protect an appeal from the underlying judgment. You filed a Rule 59 motion, as I understand it, asking the court to reconsider. That motion was deemed denied under Rule 59 90 days after it was filed, or after, so 90 days, I believe, after it was filed. That time passed, and then the court heard a 60B motion. Our problem is we don't think you get back to the, and what the motion division said, you don't get back to the underlying decree. You're here arguing that there are grounds for relieving you from the judgment. And those are very narrow.
So that's what I'm getting at.
And as I read Rule 60B, 60B says, and for any other reason, relief may be granted.
So give me, and that, the case law has interpreted that to be in very extreme, unusual cases. So I guess what I'd like to hear is, how is this case postured in such a way where you would be entitled to that kind of relief?
Well, and I think there's other areas where the court also made errors at law, and those are exactly what we're talking about here, where the court...
Well, that didn't get appealed, so I'm going to go back to my original question. How do you get extraordinary relief under 60B, and I think it's 5, 60B5, in this case, what entitles you to relief? That's what I'm confused about, because this is not a, you're getting into the merits of the permanent orders, and I'm not there yet. I need you to get me there.
The issues raised in the 60B essentially dealt with almost every item in the final orders.
But what entitles you to relief from the judgment under a 60B5 extraordinary circumstance?
I don't think this is. I'm just saying that is one of the bases upon which relief can be granted.
Okay. It's understood. Well, then what is the basis?
The basis is that the court erred in its decisions with respect to the legal foundation that supported those.
That was lost. That was lost in the 59B motion. You file a 59B motion, that tolls the time for filing an appeal. It's deemed denied 90 days, and the time for filing the appeal starts then. And you didn't appeal that. You didn't appeal the underlying division of property. What you're left with is appealing a 60B motion. That's what the motions division said, and as soon as I saw your brief and saw the dates of when things happened, I knew there was a problem with addressing whether assets are mixed, whether the court was fair in dividing the assets between you and your former wife. I know all those issues are grist for an appeal, but that appeal is not here. I mean, you can always appeal those issues, don't get me wrong, but procedurally, I don't think those issues are before us. And that's what confused me when I read your briefs, both sets of briefs, indeed, was nobody addressed 60B.
So could I get more specific? You're not seeing, you're not taking the position that this is a 60B5. You said that's one ground. What other ground under 60B? Are we here?
Well, I think 60B also allows reconsideration by the court, the trial court at that point in time, where there has been a mistake or inadvertence or neglect. And I think that is what we're here talking about today, is that the trial court made its mistakes. They were brought to the court's attention with respect to the gifting. They were brought to the court's attention with respect to transfer of assets that didn't exist, transfer of assets that were forgotten about. And that is the inadvertence and neglect that the court, that we're trying
to get. That refers to the neglect and inadvertence of a party, not to an error of the trial court in its ruling.
And that was shown, I think, by the filings that had been made, the affidavits that had been submitted, the documents that had been submitted by Mr. Vincent, which showed that, he had looked at the accounting records of the parties and the accounting that had been filed by Mr. Becker, the Fickle Family Limited Partnership's accountant, and had found those to be an error, but instead of reviewing those as Ms. Biddle did, making the corrections in them, he in fact just accepted the tax returns on their face, as did the trial court. And it's those errors that we had tried to address in that Rule 60 motion, 60B motion.
You understand the hurdle we see?
I do, and I'm not certain that, certainly that was not the intent. When you file a notice of appeal, you are intending to preserve those issues and give the other party notice that those issues will be appealed. And certainly both parties have briefed based upon that.
I have a question then. So if it's your contention that the documents that were submitted, that there were mistakes in the documents, were those mistakes brought to the attention of the court, or were these mistakes that were not brought to the attention of the court?
They were brought to the attention of the court. In fact, there in my brief, there's Mr. Becker's statement that he agreed with my analysis that the tax return should be thrown out and redone. And that was testimony at the trial. Mr. Vincent testified, just as I said before, that in fact those mistakes had been made. I asked the court in the Rule 60B motion to evaluate those issues and the other issues. The transfer, the court ordered the transfer, as I said, of the Ford F-350 and corrected that. The court forgot that there was $50,000 worth of personal property belonging to Ms. Lear. The court missed that because it essentially rubber stamped Mr. Vincent's proposed order.
Let me just do one more point of clarification. When it was brought to the attention of the court, was that initially or only in the 60B saying you didn't know about this?
I think that was brought to the attention, obviously, during the trial. There was cross-examination to that effect and also in the Rule 60B.
You're saying it was error for the court to rely on the tax returns?
I was, because, as I said in my brief, there was absolutely no evidence put on by anyone that those were accurate, and the parties knew that coming into the trial. It's one thing for somebody to come in and say, well, we're going to live with these tax returns because they were filed and they were filed under oath. But it's another thing when three expert accountants come in and say these tax returns are not reliable. We all agree on that, but you're stuck with these tax returns and the results of them. And furthermore, for the trial court to then say that there was gifting under these tax returns, because as my father put in $850,000 worth of property that should have been divided as separate property. The court never did that. The initial transfer of $573,000, which was a gift that the court found, again, was never transferred over into the marital division as separate property. So the court had the opportunity to correct those mistakes, order a master to come in and make its own factual findings if it felt uncomfortable in the tax realm. And failed to do that. So I think all these issues were raised and both in the trial and in the notice of appeal and the Rule 60B. I do.
Please the court. My name is Dale Johnson, registration number 512. I want to thank the court for allowing us to have an oral argument. It does allow me to respond to the reply brief. On July 14th, 2009, this court limited appeal to the February 9th, 2009 order that was entered by the trial court. It issues 3, 4, 7, and 8 in the the appellant's brief were not argued in that as part of that post-trial ruling, and so they are not properly before the court. What this is a factual case in a way. I mean, this was a 7-day trial. There were a lot of experts, and even if those issues were allowed, the facts support the trial court's ruling. And in order to prevail, there has to be a clearly erroneous finding, and there wasn't. I'd like to go to issue one in the reply brief, and I'm going to show you what evidence was in the record that was not laid out in the briefs. In his reply brief,
if we're here on a 60B, is that really germane?
Well, if you're talking about mistake, if you're talking about misrepresentation, you know, clear mistake. In this particular argument, appellant indicates that the court forgot about $1.3 million worth of property. And the court says, if you look at Exhibit L, which was a handwritten note that was written by his father, Doc Fickle, as part of the, we call it the FLIP, it's Family Limited Partnership, we use the acronym FLIP, the 1997 FLIP tax return, which was the first tax return. This handwritten note, Exhibit L, has about a $2.4 million value for what Doc contributed. And what Doc contributed has a lot to do with what the percentage of ownership was in the gifting issue. And so appellant says, look, Exhibit L says there's $2.4 million worth of assets. The tax returns say only 1.74. I'm going to call it 1.1 just to make it easy for everybody to follow. The court obviously forgot $1.3 million worth of assets. That's clear error. It's a mistake. It should be overturned. But if you look at the record, if you look at everything, in fact, it wasn't a mistake. In fact, it was covered. Bill Vincent, in his exhibits ZZZ and AAAA, provided a marital balance sheet, a tracing of the separate and the marital components, all assets. He credited everything that was separate to Mr. Fickell as part of the initial gifting. In addition, Exhibit X was a letter written by the appellant as the attorney for the flip on March 11, 1987. And in that letter, he sent it to Mr. Becker. It was in Mr. Becker's file. And it says that the total value of what Doc is contributing is $1.074, that $1.1 million. There's the $1.3 million difference. Why was that? Well, if you look at Exhibit L, you will see that there is a First Street subdivision that's listed on there as worth $1.3 million. But that subdivision was overvalued. It hadn't been developed yet. Mr. Vincent testified at CD 1956 that Exhibit X was correct, and that's what he relied on, not just the tax returns. He testified there was no missing monies. And then for confirmation, Marsha Biddle, who was the CPA for the flip and one of the experts that the appellant called, testified at CD 1603, lines 13 through 20, that First Street was overvalued. So the evidence, actually from his own witnesses and his own exhibits, was that the court didn't make a mistake and leave out $1.3 million worth of value. The same thing is true when you get to the arguments about additional contributions. He makes an argument the court made a mistake. It didn't credit Doc Fickell for the additional contributions that he made after the flip was established in 1997. That's in 1997.
Mr. Johnson, I'm sorry to interrupt, but sure. Is it your position that an argument that the court made a mistake, is that covered by 60B?
I think it is not, but I'm prepared here to show that there was no mistake, because
I'm still sitting here very confused. Right. Are you arguing the merits of the permanent orders right now, or
no,
are we looking at whether he's entitled to relief from judgment?
He's not entitled to relief from judgment, but this court in its February 9th order said that this court, the trial court of appeals, entered an order.
The motions division you're talking about.
Yes, entered an order that the appeal in this case would proceed from a review of the July 14th. Order of this court said it would proceed from the
February 9th order.
But under Rule 60B.
Correct. And what I'm trying to do is to cover the bases if this court found that there was a mistake. And what I've done is I've...
Mistake in Rule 60B, as I tried to point out to Mr. Fickell, is not a mistake of the court. It's a mistake of the parties.
And there was no mistake of the court here. But I wanted to give you that.
Well, you mean there's no mistake of the parties?
Well, I don't think there's a mistake of the parties. What happens in this case is that in this appeal, the appellant makes statements that the evidence is uncontradicted about various things, and it was contradicted, and there's more than enough evidence in this record to support every finding that this judge made. And so what I wanted to do...
Well, the judge made findings in that February 9th order that seemed to address anew issues that were addressed in permanent orders without looking at the 60B standard.
Correct.
And that's why I'm still very confused. I don't think the motions division contemplated anything but a 60B.
I think you're correct, but from a litigant standpoint, I wanted to come in here today to show you that everything that this judge ruled upon was supported.
But ruled upon in permanent orders or in...
permanent orders and that post-trial motion. Because he found that there were no contributions that were made. You couldn't prove them. He found that there was the argument on the...
You're talking about 60B findings, or are you talking about trial court findings? Or...
I'm talking about his February 9th order.
Okay.
And so he found that the argument was that there were contributions that Doc made afterwards that weren't accounted for. There weren't any. Doc didn't keep personal records. He didn't keep any bank records from 96 to 2000 through 99, and after that they were incomplete. You couldn't tell what monies he put in and took out were flip monies, personal monies. So when appellant labels these as contributions, there's no finding that they're contributions because you couldn't.
So aside from the mistake question,
right,
the extraordinary relief provision in 60B, you're saying doesn't cover this?
It doesn't cover this because this court had all the, it had the overwhelming amount of evidence in this case was that Doc Fickell gifted, Doc Fickell didn't keep any records, Doc Fickell kept the percentages in this partnership the same through 10 years. The court made specific findings about credibility on all this, and the court said, look, here's what we have. Mr. Vincent was the only person, the only expert who did a marital balance sheet, parsed out all of the separate and all of the marital. The court divided it 50-50. That's what happened in this case. There is no error. And there's plenty of evidence. And so what I wanted to do today was to make sure that the court knew that there was plenty of evidence, because I was concerned about the 60B as to whether or not, you know, what that would really mean.
It sounds like the trial court treated.
That's what it sounds to me like.
It does sound like that. It does sound like that.
And that was untimely at that point.
That's correct. That is correct. But I wanted to be prepared. I mean, what's really the hard part about this case is the facts are all there. This is an appeal that never should have been made. At the trial, in fact, this judge did a great job, but he ruled against us on a lot of the evidentiary objections that we might have. But if anybody had complained about it, it would have been us, and we were very happy with the result on this. And so I mean, he had all the facts. The issue of revocable, the gifts were revocable, that was never argued at trial. That was argued in the Rule 60B. Well, the problem that the appellant has is that he went into the trial saying the gifting didn't occur. And so he couldn't put on evidence that it occurred but was revocable. So there was nothing in the record. And when you got to the end, as of the date of permanent orders, no gifts had ever been revoked. So it was purely speculative, and that's what the judge said in the post-trial motion. It's purely speculative. Even if you bought the arguments on the partnership, which you shouldn't buy because the partnership agreement, Exhibit F, does not allow for revoking gifts at all. The point is, they never were revoked. It was a non-issue. I don't know, in terms of the statute of frauds issues, court made all the findings necessary for gift. The law on gifting has not changed at all. The cases cited by the appellant actually don't stand for you have to have a bill of sale. You have to have something in writing. And here we had the tax returns, we had the documents, we had the testimony. Again, the issue about issue three about a total reliance on the tax returns has never been raised, but the court didn't rely totally on the tax returns. The court had 7 days of evidence from a lot of different witnesses. The tracing issue, that was never raised in the post-trial motion. But in fact, the court had the evidence from the appellant himself, but he couldn't trace out anything.
You're not going to accept the protection.
I'm going to accept
that the rule gives you.
I'm going to accept that protection, but I've got my 15 minutes. And I can't prepare to tell you that this case has all the facts that you need that are in that record to support everything that judge did. The judge did a great job. Does this court have any questions of me? I mean, I've only done a few of these. I've never walked away before my time was up, but you know what? Maybe that's memorable. Any questions, I'm done.
Thank you.
Mr. Fickell, I guess I'll ask you the same question. It does sound like this is the judge treating this like a Rule 59 motion, and it's not timely. Would you agree with that or not?
That is, court's decision on the motion was not timely?
Correct. It's a 59.
It's a 59 motion.
The motion was filed timely.
No, I'm not saying that. The court ruling on the 59.
It was delayed.
Well, it's automatically denied after a passage of, 90, as I believe, 90 days. Without court action, it's denied, and the time for starting the appeal runs.
By rule.
By rule.
Right.
59F.
And he didn't rule within that limited time period.
You're not the first person to be caught in this trap, I might add.
So what I'm saying is that motion was denied. So what I guess what I'm saying is, and I stand here just as confused, is that, and so does Ms. West and everybody else, that the court failed to rule and therefore it was automatically denied. I understand that. But the appeal was still timely filed. And the notice of
appeal. The motion of 59?
Yes.
But it didn't.
Well, I didn't see that in that order. What I saw in the order, in the court's order, and I think we walked through that series of dates in the response to the motion that was filed to strike the appeal. And based upon that,
let's go off the clock a minute. Because that's not my understanding. I don't know if I have the documents here. When was the notice of appeal filed, Mr. Fickle? Do you remember?
March 13th of 09, is that correct?
I don't have that filed with me. I'll be back in my briefing.
I have a copy of the notice of appeal with a date stamp, March 13th.
And then there was an amended notice of appeal.
But the first notice was filed March 13th. Is it your position that the motions division got it wrong?
I couldn't tell.
It also wouldn't be the first time.
I couldn't tell what the motions division had decided, why it ruled the way it did. But it was at least my interpretation, and apparently Mr. Johnson's interpretation from the response that he filed, that in fact the issues were the judge's ruling in the case as opposed to strictly limited to the Rule 60B. And I know that's what the motion division said. But I think the appeal was timely filed, I think notice was given, and I think those issues are before this court and this panel. No.
Start the.
No. And I'm still confused.
Okay. Start the clock. It's not running.
I know that. I asked him to stop it from running. Okay, go ahead and start the clock. We'll check this, Mr. Fickle, and if we are wrong, if the motions division was wrong, we may well reschedule this argument.
Okay.
Because we've been operating under the assumption that you're appealing, you're limited to a 60B order, I think.
Okay.
Is that correct with you?
Yeah.
And
I understand
if we're,
that's why
if we're wrong confused. If we're wrong on that, we'll be the first to admit it. And we'll notify the parties that we want another argument. If we're right on that, then you have 52 seconds.
and I would point out and concur with what Mr. Johnson said, that there was a lot of evidence. And that evidence, in particular, probably of the 7 days of this trial, four of those days, or four and a half of those days, were spent on the Stickle Family Limited Partnership and the testimony. And what I'm saying is, where there is clear error, where every expert comes in and says these tax returns are unreliable, and Dr. Fickle, who's 90 years old, relied on those tax returns, and now we're trying this case based upon these tax returns, and we're not taking into consideration the gifting that took place under any circumstances. That is the mistake I'm talking about. Thank you.
This has been a very interesting argument. Motions divisions are not typically wrong. It is indeed, I might add, rare as hen's teeth. But if they are, in fact, wrong, and this appeal is timely as to the 59B motion, then we will reschedule the argument. Okay? Other than that, we thank counsel for their argument. The case will be deemed submitted subject to reservation previously stated, and a written opinion will issue in due course.